Ever feel like zoning laws are a maze you just can't escape? Like trying to figure out what you can even build where is some impossible puzzle.
Oh, absolutely. And it gets even trickier when you start thinking about, well, a property's history.
Right. Like, could something that happened way back when totally derail how it can be used now?
You're hitting on something super important for property law, and that's exactly what we're digging into today.
Today's deep dive is all about a case, Acton v. Jackson County. It really shows how doing something illegal on a property can completely wipe out those so-called grandfathered zoning rights, you know, the ones that are supposed to protect you because the use existed before the zoning rules changed.
This case is from 1993, the Missouri Court of Appeals. And it might sound like a local thing, but trust me, it goes way deeper.
For sure, especially for anyone heading into law thinking about real estate, this stuff is gold.
Absolutely. This case really shows that those pre-existing zoning rights, they aren't always the ironclad protection people think they are.
All right, so let's get into it. Paint us a picture. Where are we and what's going on with this property?
Okay, so picture this. 8603 East Truman Road in Jackson County, Missouri. It's 1974, and Theodore Irving II opens a massage parlor there.
Seems pretty straightforward, a normal business, right?
Yeah, at first glance. But here's where things take a turn. Over time, Mr. Irving decides to, shall we say, expand his services beyond, typical massage therapy.
I see where this is going. Not exactly staying within the lines of the law, huh?
Exactly. The massage parlor started offering illegal prostitution services. And, well, that kind of thing tends to attract unwanted attention.
Yeah, not something you can usually keep under wraps forever.
Yeah.
So, what happened? Did the authorities step in?
They did. The illegal activities eventually led to a court order shutting the whole massage parlor down. Jackson County wasn't too thrilled about those extra services, to put it mildly.
No surprise there. So what happens to the property after that? Does it just sit there, abandoned?
Well, eventually it gets bought by Keith Acton. And Mr. Acton, he has this idea. He wants to reopen the massage parlor.
Okay, interesting. But wasn't the place shut down? How do you think he could just reopen it?
He figured he had a loophole. His argument was all about the concept of non-conforming use. Basically, he claimed the massage parlor was already up and running before the zoning ordinances that would restrict massage parlors came into effect.
So he's playing the it was here first card, thinking those zoning rules don't apply because the use predates them.
Exactly. That's the heart of his argument. He's saying the massage parlor has this grandfathered status, but Jackson County, they weren't buying it. They denied his request to reopen.
Which, of course, leads to a legal showdown. So everyone heads to court. What happened at the trial court level? Did they side with Acton and his grandfathered rights argument?
This is where it gets interesting. Initially, the trial court actually ruled in Acton's favor. It looked like he might get his way and reopen that massage parlor.
Okay, so round one goes to Acton. But I have a feeling this isn't the end of the story.
You'd be right. There's a twist coming. Because remember, this is a legal battle. So naturally, the case goes up on appeal.
And as we know, the appellate court can sometimes completely change the game. So, what happened? Did they uphold the trial court's decision?
Nope, they did not. The appellate court actually reversed the decision, siding with Jackson County, and that's where things get really interesting from a legal standpoint.
A classic legal flip-flop. So, what was the key issue that convinced the appellate court to change direction? Why did they ultimately rule against Acton?
The appellate court focused on a super important legal question. Can a non-conforming use, like our massage parlor here, still be protected if the previous owners expanded it to include illegal activities? In other words, does that past illegal conduct, even if it's by a previous owner, completely taint the grandfathered zoning rights? This case really challenges the whole idea that a non-conforming use is some kind of forever pass to do whatever you want on a property, regardless of its past.
Right. It's not some magical shield attached to the land, no matter what went down before.
Yeah.
So walk us through the court's logic here. What were the legal principles they leaned on to reach their decision?
So first things first, we got to start with the very definition of a non-conforming use. Legally speaking, it's a use that was already happening before the current zoning restrictions were put in place. And importantly, it has to have continued in that same lawful manner ever since. That word lawful is doing a lot of work in this definition.
Okay, I'm seeing where you're going with this.
Yeah.
So, if the original use wasn't entirely legal, or if it changed into something illegal along the way, that throws a wrench into the whole grandfathered argument.
Exactly. It's not enough to just say, well, this use was here before the new rule, so I can do whatever I want. The law also cares about whether the use has always been legal. And this is where something called the strict construction doctrine comes in.
Okay, break that down for us. What's the strict construction doctrine, and how does it apply here?
Think of it like this. The law is generally pretty hesitant to create loopholes. Exceptions to the rules, like non-conforming uses, are viewed with a bit of skepticism. Courts tend to interpret them very narrowly, you know, not giving them a ton of wiggle room.
That makes sense. Zoning is all about planning for the future, trying to create order and consistency. And these non-conforming uses, they're kind of like remnants of the past, potentially messing with that whole plan.
Exactly. And that's why there's this underlying policy goal to eventually phase them out, to have everything neatly aligned with the zoning rules. So courts are often looking for reasons to say, nope, this doesn't qualify as a non-conforming use anymore, rather than bending over backward to keep them around.
So in this case, how did the whole prostitution issue play into that strict interpretation of non-conforming uses? Did the court see it as just a minor side hustle, or did they view it as something more significant?
They definitely did not see it as just a minor thing. The court determined that adding those illegal activities, specifically prostitution, fundamentally changed the entire nature and character of what was supposed to be a legitimate massage parlor. It wasn't just some small, inconsequential addition. It completely altered the essence of the business.
So it wasn't just a massage parlor dabbling in some shady stuff. The illegal activity became a core part of its identity.
Exactly. And this is where things get really important. The court said this change in character, driven by the illegal activities, actually ended the non-conforming use status before Acton even bought the property. It didn't survive those unlawful expansions by the original owners.
Wow. So the grandfathered protection didn't transfer with the property. It actually died with the previous owner's illegal actions.
That's right. And the court was very clear about their reasoning. They basically said, look, non-conforming uses are not our favorite thing.
Which makes sense, given what you explained about the goals of zoning.
Right. The court even said, and I'm paraphrasing here, that non-conforming uses mess with zoning plans and should be eliminated as quickly as possible, you know, while still being fair. So they're not going to bend over backward to preserve them.
And they also made it crystal clear that uses that are unlawful don't get grandfathered protections, even if they predate zoning laws. That seems like a pretty strong statement, right? Like they're saying illegality overrides any claim to historical precedence when it comes to zoning.
It is a strong statement. They're basically saying that just because something illegal was happening before zoning rules were put in place, that doesn't give it a free pass to continue forever. The law is not going to protect unlawful activities just because they've been around for a while.
Got it. So no grandfathering for lawbreakers, no matter how long they've been doing their thing. The law comes first. So let's zoom out a bit. Based on all this, what are the key takeaways for our listeners, especially those future lawyers out there? What should they be thinking about when dealing with potential non-conforming uses, especially if there's even a hint of a questionable past?
This case boils down to a few key questions. First, did the original use, you know, the one claiming grandfathered status, expand in a way that was illegal, like in Acton, with the shift into prostitution? That's a big red flag. Second, did those illegal activities basically change the core nature of the original use? Was it just a minor addition, or did it transform the whole thing? And third, did those illegal activities actually end the non-conforming use before the property was sold to someone else? These are the crucial things to figure out.
Okay, so those questions give us a framework for analyzing these situations. Now let's get practical. What are the big picture takeaways from Acton v. Jackson County for our listeners? What should they keep in mind when advising clients on zoning issues, especially with non-conforming uses?
I think the biggest takeaway is that non-conforming use status is a lot more fragile than people might think. Even if a use predates zoning regulations, doing something illegal, even expanding into something illegal, can completely jeopardize that protection. It's not a free pass to evolve into something unlawful and still expect to be shielded by those old rights.
So even a seemingly small-scale illegal activity could have massive consequences down the road for a property zoning. Like, it's not something to mess around with.
Absolutely. And another big takeaway is about the overall policy perspective on non-conforming uses. They're generally viewed as temporary exceptions to the rules, not permanent fixtures. Zoning aims for consistency, and eventually those non-conforming uses are supposed to disappear.
So relying on them forever or trying to stretch them too far is probably not a winning strategy. They're more like temporary guests, not permanent residents.
That's a great way to put it. And perhaps the most crucial takeaway, especially for all the aspiring lawyers out there, is the absolute necessity of doing your homework. Due diligence is everything in these situations.
I can see why that would be crucial.
If you're representing a client who's looking to buy a property with an existing non-conforming use, you have to dig deep into the history of that property. Uncover how it's been used. Were there any illegal activities, any major changes in the type of business? Failing to do that digging could lead to some really nasty surprises for your client down the line.
Yeah, it's like a ticking time bomb if you don't uncover those potential issues early on. You can't just assume that a use that's been around for a while is automatically protected, especially if there's any whiff of past illegal activity.
Absolutely. The Acton case really drives home the principle. If a non-conforming use expands to include illegal activities, that protected status is gone, period. And that loss of status applies even to new owners who weren't even involved in the illegal stuff. It's a legal consequence that sticks with the property itself.
So understanding this case is essential for anyone dealing with zoning law and property rights. It really shows how much history matters, especially when that history involves breaking the law.
For sure. And it leaves us with a really interesting question to think about. Looking beyond clear-cut illegal activities like we saw in Acton, how much can the character of a non-conforming use change before it loses its protection? Even without something explicitly illegal happening, at what point does a use become so different from its original form that it's not considered the same use anymore under zoning law?
That's a great question to ponder. It shows how complex this area of law can be. There's a lot of nuance, and the lines aren't always crystal clear.
Exactly. And that's why cases like Acton are so important. They give us a framework for thinking about these issues and highlight the potential pitfalls that everyone involved in property transactions needs to be aware of.
So to wrap things up, the big lesson here is don't take non-conforming uses for granted. Do your research, understand the history, and be aware that past illegal activities can have a lasting impact on a property's zoning rights. And for all the future lawyers out there, this case is definitely one to keep in your back pocket.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time for another fascinating exploration of the legal world.
See you next time.